D2, number 18A.
Now, we take the last vertical column on the chart and on the survey, science. I just want to give a short picture of what this vertical column could give us and teach us and present to us. Let's again start right on the top of the survey, where I felt that we could perhaps pinpoint science as that which is self-explanatory, self-explanation. That science is that which explains itself, that it has to give the reason of everything, but science capitalized does explain itself. It is self-explanatory. So what does that self-explanation of science really tell us? I think on the level of divine science, there we have that science first through the biblical symbolization of the triune person God as life, truth and love, father, son and mother as the triune person, meaning that science is always that which takes the Word and the Christ and Christianity into one. It makes of the Word Christ Christianity not the stretch, not the line, but the circle. And so, again, gives a sense of that self-organizing system of being. In this self-organizing sense of being, we see that divine science is really the divine self-understanding. It doesn't understand, it doesn't give understand, it doesn't bring understanding. It is that which says that being itself understands itself. And that this is the highest sense of understanding from which we can start. So that every explanation we can give to anything really starts by seeing that the answer is in God itself. That God understands itself, that principle understands itself in one big view. Therefore, why should we explain something if principle is the self-explanation of itself? Again, we come again and again on that level of divine science to the point where we say, what's the use of asking always questions and questions? Why not let principle answer itself? See that principle is the understanding of itself and therefore contains all the explanations. Therefore, it's no use to try to approach being from outside and say, how can I understand being? The I can never understand being. Unless I go out from principle, I have no real starting point for understanding either. So within the infinite principle, there is the infinite answer. This self-explanation or divine self-understanding is also very often coupled with the Holy Ghost. Namely, as that development of life, truth and love, of the Word, Christ, Christianity and science, which gives the reason for its existence, which gives the eternal unfoldment of its very existence. Quite often when she speaks on the level of divine science, as science, she brings in that tone of the Holy Ghost, which really means that if we start from the divine principle love and look out from that, then thought is always developed into a new sense of life and of truth and of love. And that's the biggest thing we can understand. We would like to understand this situation and that situation and this point and the other point, whereas on the level of divine science we really should first ask, can I understand life, truth and love? And I can't understand it otherwise but by seeing the principle itself evolves a constant understanding of itself as life, truth, and love, the development of the Holy Ghost. So the Holy Ghost is not a theological term. Yes, it is a theological term, but it means something very scientific. And therefore the theologians of today, they hardly dare to talk about the Holy Ghost because they just don't know what it means. For them it is a mystical symbol, religious symbol, and yet we can see that principle must constantly understand itself, explain itself in a continuously unfolding and unfolding and unfolding way, therefore in a new way of life, bringing out new facts of truth, and therefore bringing whole mankind further ahead, love. This self-understanding here, we have also been pointed as harmonious self-government. It isn't just government, and it isn't man's self-government. It is God's own self-government which is meant here. As we said in divine science, God is all and one, and governing himself, you see, governing himself. So God governs himself, he governs the universe. So here we get that rhythmic round, as we have seen before on an earlier occasion, how here it is explained how God manifests itself out of itself, through itself, as itself, and to itself. This is really the harmonious self-government, the divine self-government, God governing himself, and it gives a sense of the kingdom of heaven. It is here further indicated as a unity of principle and spiritual power. On this level, we don't have a separation of principle and then how principle is applied and how it expresses itself as spiritual power. So principle and practice at this point is the very same thing. In the oneness of being, we cannot have a principle and then another field, namely its application as practice. Therefore, we know so well that if our understanding of the divine principle is cultured, and in the measure as it is cultured, it has spiritual power. We can't have a higher understanding and less spiritual power. We cannot give our whole heart to the understanding of this one principle and think that it has no effect. In the very measure as we look deeper into reality, in that measure it has an effect on us, on the surrounding, on the world, on everything. So let's get rid of that sense that we have a principle and a practice, that we always say yes, I understand that in principle, but I don't know how to practice it. Well, that's showing that we don't understand principle. Because principle, self-explained, is practice. Principle, knowing itself, is practice. Principle, knowing itself, as itself, and through itself, and for itself, is the greatest dynamic power we can think of. It is just a question that we touch principle in the right way. And here in divine science, on the level of divine science, we have that consciousness where we go out from science itself, which says, I am the infinite principle. And therefore, because I go out from the infinite principle, that principle is on the level of divine science, the divine principle. Therefore, the divine principle which is constantly uniting within itself life and truth and love. Therefore, we have in the chart on that level of divine science, when we look at the synonymous term, we have divine principle love. The infinite principle is reduced to the point of divine principle, which says there is only one principle, not many principles. one principle which is divine and which contains life, truth and love as one. Why is it principle love? Why is it coupled with love? It is because here in science, which gives the explanation of the whole universe, of the all in all, it is not enough to see that there is only one principle of all, but must see that because the principle of being is the principle of everything, as we have seen, that principle God is the principle of the inclined plane, the principle of harmonious action, of the principle of the what is called the numbers. Yes, that's it. Consummation of numbers and so on. That principle expresses itself in infinite principles, but all must be integrated into a whole. It must make sense. The world has seen what will happen if we have many principles which are not integrated into a whole. It is specialization, making a lot of departments of knowledge, and in that the whole knowledge which we have is atomized in specialized fields. That's why today, more than ever before, we have this demand for integrating all sciences so that they play together and combine together and work together into one combined whole, so that they make sense, that they are not interfering with each other, not combating each other, that there is no friction between them, but there is that integration of science into a whole plane. That's why this divine principle is love. Is love. Funny enough, you know, the world feels that. I have recently read a few books, two on biology, one on cybernetics, the other one on physics, the other one on paleontology, the other one on art and so on. And all fundamental books on those subjects with a philosophical touch in it, seeing what these science are going to do, how they are, in which direction they are going to develop. And always I was enormously impressed that usually at the end of the book, the last chapter was devoted to show that all these sciences, that each one of these sciences show, these sciences will bring us nowhere except to a terrific collapse if they are not governed by love. Today, it isn't so much the theologians that demand love. It is usually the scientists that demand love. They see that if physics is just taken as physics, it can be a very, very destructive thing. It must be governed by love. That biology, especially after the latest discoveries, taken by themselves, they can enormously be destructive in their intention, unless man governs them with love. And so even cybernetics comes along and says there is no other way out of what really cybernetics can do to man, except that cybernetics is governed by love. It is today the scientists that preach the demand, the command of love. But naturally, their sense of love is something completely different from what the theology has taught from the pulpit. They have a sense of love as the potential possibilities of perfection. They see that there is in being that potentiality to use all what we have found out through the sciences for the best of mankind, for perfection, and that they call love. See, it's a touch which really comes in here at this level of divine science that says, if that principle is not love, then it is just a rational, logical principle. And it has no integrating sense, saving sense within itself. Then we come to absolute Christian science and begin to realize that if our consciousness on the level of divine science is not satisfied with accepting that there is just life, truth, and love going on as one divine principle, and feels that we should know something more, that something more should be explained about details, about a specific situation. So absolute Christian science comes along and says, all right, I reduce to you that divine principle to the point of seeing that this divine principle operates as a calculus of ideas. That the calculus of ideas is just the other view on principle from the point of view of the idea. It says, here in the calculus of ideas, you have the identical representation of what's going on in a principle, namely the infinite combination of ideas in perfect harmony, always bringing out a new truth. We have here interpretation, because interpretation means that we can interpret the divine principle through its idea, that ideas make sense the moment we interpret them in the light of principle. And so here explanation, self-explanation becomes interpretation, namely interpretation means that something big is being explained and brought forth, explained and expounded through a simple or single idea or situation. Only then, really, you see, when we begin to see that everything that happens in our life, in the world, and so on, is really an idea of principle, and therefore must be seen as interpreting that principle in a specific way, we get the sense of the harmonious universe. Or else, if we don't interpret what is going on from its principle, we have again a diverse, a misinterpretation of everything. Therefore, here on absolute Christian science, we see that everything, the whole universe, has to be interpreted from the divine principle. The divine principle of the universe must interpret the universe, and nothing else. So whatever goes on, it's no use to see what we think about it or what our senses believe about it, but just to turn away and say, what does principle know about it? And then we get the perfect interpretation. We also have here spiritual evidence, as you see, which says something much bigger than proof. An evidence is something which does not need logical reasoning, logical proof. But evidence is so sure of itself that it does not appeal to reason and to logic. So often you feel very certain about something and you couldn't give an explanation. And yet you know that's right. See, well, that's evidence. And it's no use to say, well, I don't trust that until I find the reason for it. I think that's going too far. If an evidence is there, that's quite enough. Only then, when we are not sure, we can appeal to the lower sense of Christian science and appeal to reason and see if it's right. But we should much more trust the evidence. If we are trying to live spiritually, then we can rely much more on evidence, on intuition, on spontaneous insights or thought. We have been miseducated to find for everything first the reason before we do it. Why is it that suddenly when you do something out of the blue comes to you as a thought, as a mostly as a thought or a feeling, which has nothing to do with what you do, quite from another realm, so to say, which says, do this, do that. And then we say, why should I? Some strange thought enters in. But if you go and do it, you will see that it's always right. So often, say, something comes to you and says, oh, why shouldn't I write to so-and-so? Why shouldn't I telephone so-and-so? There is no reason for it. But you will see that if you do it, it has a reason. It is right. We have been miseducated no more to trust spiritual evidence, no more to trust spiritual intuition and do that which spiritual intuition does. You see, an artist only works on that point. He cannot allow himself to drop down to a logical reasoning. An artist cannot reason out what he's doing. If he's a genius, he works on that level of spiritual evidence. He works on that intuition which suddenly falls on him, and he does it. If it is a writer or a poet or a painter or a sculptor or whatever it is, because at that point, the whole is usually impelling itself on us. And then it is only a matter of putting away all that obstructs it. Instead of saying, is there a reason for it? Does any poet first ask, is there a reason for writing this verse? He just is impelled to it. Is a composer of music asking first, shall I write it this way or that way? Shall I plan out how I'm going to do it? If a composer plans out, he will never make a good composition. Never. But if he listens to divine signs, to that point where he knows I and the Father are one, and the Father and I are one, their principle and spiritual power is one, their principle and its interpretation is one, then that interpretation comes to us and we are so sure of it, of its rightness of it, that it's only a question, are we going to do it and obey it? Before we refer back to human reasoning, we come into a consciousness where we have to get hold of this comprehensive sense of being, where always the whole spontaneously, as a sudden insight, as a sudden enlightenment breaks on us, and then it's right. Then interpretation has become just divine spiritual evidence. This is the true sense, really, of intuition and inspiration. From the point of view of the synonymous terms, we see here that it is symbolized as truth and love. You see, it's no more symbolized through life, because we don't need any more a creative urge. Here, the creative urge is out of the picture, because science is never creative in itself. It is only creative to human reasoning onto the human plane of thought. But facts, scientific facts, have never been created, have never been brought into the universe. They exist forever. They are facts by the very fact that they are facts. They don't need to be created. So science really tells us that facts are always complete at hand. They don't have to be brought about, nor invented, nor created. They are what they are. Before Abraham was, I am. The facts are timeless. So we can put out the sense of the creative impulsion of life which we have on this level. So that very thing which I said before about evidence becomes clear, namely, that the truth itself is in itself so complete, love, truth and love, that every fact in being is in itself so complete that it precipitates itself on us as a complete, finished idea which we don't have to question in any way or shape or form. We don't have to ask, why are you right? Why should that be so? Is it right that it is so? Truth is truth itself, and knows that it is true, and therefore knows that it knows it. That's evidence. If we would go out from that, and we will see that just a bit later on, that this is really the great starting point for any new discovery, that we see that in truth they don't need to be discovered. That in for every discovery which takes place on the lower level of Christian Science, that every discovery has already been established as true, as fact, in absolute Christian Science, and is always complete. If Adam would have known enough, he could have had a piano. Nobody had first to make a piano. It is as a fact, it existed all since ever. So all what is going to be discovered now and forever, all what we are going to discover about science, has existed since ever as a fact, truth, which is complete in every detail already, love. And that's the starting point from which we find our insight and our understanding and our new vision. So each idea is already complete wherever it is. And each truth is already fulfilling, really, its perfect design, its perfect place in the design of love. Is already embedded, so to say, in the whole of love. All right. If we see that, we go further down to the level of Christian Science. And on the level of Christian Science, on the survey, we try to pinpoint that as scientific understanding. So we see, on the top, we first had in Divine Science, divine self-understanding. God knowing himself, God governing himself, God knowing himself. This God knowing himself on the level of absolute Christian Science was saying, all right, then I interpret myself to every situation because I know every situation. And so I am the true interpretation of every situation. If that true interpretation to every situation is being understood by us, then we have a scientific understanding. It comes to us as scientific understanding. It comes to us as ideational being. Because, as we saw in absolute Christian Science, the facts of truth are already complete. We see, therefore, that these facts exist for us also, that they are being, that they don't need to be created, that they don't need to be revealed, that they don't need first to be elevated, lifted up into principle, but that they exist as ideas of being, as factual being. So we have here to do with that existence of ideas which give the proof of everything, by disproving elusive thinking or misunderstanding.